Dakota salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at COTA.com/trip planner.
Hello, friends, and welcome to a very happy Monday morning edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast, proudly sponsored by Stardust Spirits and Molecular UK. Things are looking up. Town got their first win away at the weekend. It was a big one, 4-1. Braces for George Hurst and Marcelino Nunes. Things are looking good, and I'm pleased to say I'm joined by the returning biggest of big dogs, Stuart Watson, back from your week in the peaks. How are you?
Woof. Is how...
Hey, woof.
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, not too bad, thanks. I had this stinking cold that's been going around a little bit, but managed to walk it off in the fresh air of the peaks and return to a victory at Loftus Road, which was great.
Alex would have been in hospital with that cold, mate. So I'm pleased it's not spread to him yet. Rossa, you're giggling away because you know that's true. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, good old AJ. When he's not here, we can have a little joke about him. But yeah, a lot of nightmares and dramas with him, bless him. But yeah, no, much happier now because of a win on the weekend with Kieran McKinnon aside.
Yeah, it was fantastic, wasn't it? Let's hear, shall we, before we get rolling, let's hear first of all from Kieran McKinnon about this win, and then we can dive straight into breaking it all down, and it'll be good fun.
Congratulations, first away win of the season, some really good goals in there as well. What should we like on that win?
Yeah, good win. As you say, goals were a real highlight, of course. That's obviously the case in football, but today even more so. Two terrific team goals, really well worked, things that we're working on and continue to work on. So loads to build on from them. And two brilliant individual goals, of course, no goal in. Football is 100% individual because you have to win the free kicks in those areas. But when Marcelino steps up and does that twice in pretty quick succession, it's of course a massive impact on the results. So four brilliant goals for the supporters to enjoy away from home. Some good football played, especially when we got the goal and we got the confidence and the margin. Then controlled the game really well once we got a few goals ahead. Lessons to learn. Certainly the period after we scored early, we can do better to really push on in the game. It's the first time we've had the first goal away from home, so you know each situation is new for this team at the moment, and how we sort of really push on, execute well, stay concentrated, stay really consistent with our actions, and we became a little bit erratic in that phase, and then the game still becomes a little bit open. But lessons to learn, things to improve, but certainly lots of positives.
There we go then, Stu. We'll start with you, because last time you were on this podcast, I believe, Stu, it was just me and you, and it was post the Charlton capitulation, and we were using some fairly strong language about not running towards adversity and all the various problems that game exposed. Since then, of course, and since you were last on here, they've got back on track. They're solid but not spectacular 1-0 win against West Brom, and then they go and score 4 at QPR, which I think all of us would say was a bit of a surprise in terms of the amount of goals they got. A team that are doing relatively well, and obviously Town's first away win. So how are you feeling now after the two wins since we last spoke?
Obviously better. I think I really liked the West Brom game. I've obviously not spoken on here since then, but yeah. I thought some of the reaction to that, underwhelming reaction to the West Brom game, I didn't really understand, because everyone was calling for the team to be more solid, stop giving away so many chances on the counter-attack, stop giving away sloppy goals. Ipswich Town answered that with the manner of that West Brom victory. The patient got the win, got the deserved win, I thought, that day. This game is a difficult one to analyse, because it was far tighter than the scoreline suggested. Never has the cliche of goals change games felt more true. I really don't know how that second half would have panned out had Nunez not whipped that free kick in with barely a minute played of the second half, because there were some of those traits that we talked about. Conceded, got pegged back to 1-1. Suddenly things got a little bit wobbly and they did look a little bit open to the counter at times, but to their credit, they managed to ride that through and they did get the goal at the start of the second half. And from there, they were able to kind of stamp their authority on it, and QPR were the team that crumbled. But goals change games. No matter what level you play at, it's amazing, isn't it? One team can have absolute control, domination, and then all it takes is a goal to change the mood in the crowd, the mood on the pitch, the momentum. And that's what this game was, really. So four goals probably flattered Ipswich a little bit. If you look at XG, which doesn't always tell the full story, but it wasn't that high from an Ipswich Town perspective. It's two free kicks and it's two really good moves for the goals. And obviously that proved to be enough. So just as All in the World wasn't broken and miserable after those defeats to Middlesbrough and Charlton, which on other days could have tipped the other way. Everything isn't suddenly tickety-boo after a, as you say, solid but unspectacular win and a 4-1 victory that perhaps flattered a little bit as well. But progress, good steps in the right direction. That's probably how I'd sum it up.
That solid, sensible, rational analysis, Stu, will never catch on, I'm afraid. You have to swing wildly from one extreme to the other if you're going to get clicks. Rossi, how was it for you sitting on the sideline?
Wet in that. I wasn't actually ready for Hurst's goal on the opener because the heavens opened as the teams came out and I was like, I had no cover and I was like, oh no, this is going to be another Blackburn moment. Because it was a lovely sunny day when we arrived at Loftus Road. Me and Stu and good old Barry sort of walking in. Lovely sunshine. I was, got pitch sides, taking a picture of Kieran McKenna and Mark Ashton, having a nice little chin wag, talking about Celtic, I'm sure. And it was lovely. And then as the game just kicked off, the clouds just got very dark and then rain fell down. So, I got a wet bottom, I have to admit, in that first half. But it was an away win at the end of the day, which we've not been able to talk about since Bournemouth, the first away win in the Championship since that Coventry night. It was good that we got some goals. Scoring early was a nice change as well, because I think that's, as Kieran McKenna mentioned in his audio clip, it's the first time we've scored first away from home. So starting off early is good.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of things you'd want to tick, Stewie, and we spoke about it a lot in terms of Town not getting an early goal and then kind of getting frustrated and maybe starting to fall apart a bit. First assist as well for Sindre Valle-Ageli. A lovely bit of work down the right. Stands out for Hurst, who finishes nicely. That's just a nice goal.
It is, yeah. This was a step forward for Valle-Ageli, no doubt about it. I think we've seen really from the start his raw attributes, haven't we, in terms of when you see him on the pitch, his size. He's for someone who's probably still growing into his body and has got a bit of growing to do at 19, he's got a presence about him. And it's rare that you have that sort of physical size and also then the fleet-footed speed and skill that goes with it. That's why Ipswich have paid a Championship record fee, £17.5 million. There's been games where we've been really encouraged by what we've seen. There's been other days, I think Middlesbrough away, where he's looked a little bit lost. I think we're all sort of prepared for that, weren't we? A young man come to a new country, new league, going to take a bit of time to find his feet. A lot of comparisons with Amari Hutchinson, how it took him a little bit of time during that loan season in the Championship, and we saw come the end of it what he was and what Ipswich were prepared to pay for him. So hopefully he can go on that journey. And this was certainly a big step in that journey, because, as you say, that assist was exceptional for the first goal. Just glided past his marker with a sharp step over and stood up the cross for Hurst. And then heavily involved with Hurst second in the second half as well, with a driving run up the right. So his performance, the performance of that right-hand side with Darnell Furlong behind him, was a was a big piece of encouragement for me, because that right side has been a bit of an issue now for a little while. We're going back to kind of Burns and Twanzebe, arguably Burns and Danasian before that, since we've seen kind of a real connection down that right-hand side, a lot of chopping and changing. So those two, and Sindre in particular, was a big positive for me.
You missed the eyes for the days of Wes Burns and the Danasians. What times they were, heady times. Should we all talk about George Hurst? Obviously, he got the early goal, and then he went on to get another one as well. First time he scored more than once for Town. And clearly, he's had a difficult time of things, Rossi, in the past few weeks. In fact, our columnist, Cole Fuller, wrote about him being appalled by the actual abuse, he called it, abuse, not just kind of moans and groans, actual abuse chucked at George Hurst in recent times at Portman Road. So really good to see him score two, what you'd say, a classic striker's goals.
Yeah, obviously he leaped like a salmon for the first one, and the second one was just beat his defender and headed it down, and he celebrated both ways for me. So as a photographer, I was very happy. So George, thank you very much. but yeah, he just dominated his defenders in this game. He's obviously been getting a lot of criticism. I think it's because of what he said and then the missed penalty at Borough. But he's proven he can score in this division. He has done, when part of that, team that got promoted. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed his performance from George. And it was very unlucky not to get a hat trick. That would have been nice as well, to get that match ball, because he had a few chances to do that. But yeah, maybe this is sort of given some Town fans a little thing. Okay, I know it's only one game. Like, it could be rubbish on Tuesday night and it goes back. It's like, winning and then getting back down to earth when you sort of lose or draw. But no, really, really impressed by George in this game. And, he speaks well, doesn't he? So I'm sure we'll play a clip of him discussing the goals. But yeah, a good two goals for him, and that'll give him confidence, because strikers, when you score goals, you can walk around the place thinking, yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah, I'm really pleased for him. I'm going to ask you about George Hurst as well in a minute, Stu, but let's hear from Kieran McKenna first of all about King George, as I'm calling him now.
I think it's a good boost for him. George, manages to stay pretty confident. I've been happy with the work that he's been given to the team, to be honest. He's won. There was a few bits last week that I didn't love in the game from the crowd. But he's working really, really well, and he's given a lot to the team. His role, different teammates to learn and adapt to now, slightly different system to learn and adapt to those people around him. He always gives us a good focal point. When he runs hard for the team, and he gives us leadership and he puts himself about, I'll always take that as a really good base. Of course, some days you can be a little bit better in your execution, some days a little bit worse, but that's when he's given what he can give to the team, he's a hell of a focal point to help the team. So big positive for him today. He's been getting chances across most of the season. Last weekend was actually probably the first game he didn't really have any sniffs of goal, but we spoke this week about just sticking at it, getting in the right positions from the crosses, and giving everything that he can to the team and trusting the goals will come, and really happy they did for him today.
Okay then, Stu, I mean, you wrote at length about this in your verdict. Where are we at with George Hurst? Because part of me wonders if he's kind of been a victim of too high expectations going into this season, because he did all right in the Premier League. We were all talking him up. I certainly was talking him up ahead of this season, being 20, 25 goals this season. He's going to be an absolute star. He's got 5 goals in 12 games. That's a decent return. And arguably he could have had maybe double that. If he had his shooting boots. But as you stressed in your bit in the verdict, he's constantly running, constantly working for the team, and he's getting into positions, which from, I guess, as McKenna's just mentioned there, if he's not getting into positions, there's reasons for concern. But the fact is, he still is.
Yeah. After the West Brom game, there was a couple of accusations thrown sort of my way, our way, for making too much of the Kieran McKenna comments about the crowd, where he talked about it being a really, really, really difficult, I think three times really, atmosphere, which is probably overplaying it slightly. And people saying, well, he was just referring to the general mood, and it wasn't really at the crowd per se. It was the sort of the more the general side of things. Let me tell you, I know for a fact that Kieran McKenna wasn't happy with the crowd after that West Brom game. Now, he's not he's clever enough not to go to war with supporters.
Mm.
He knows how big a role they have to play in it, and he's obviously name-checked the crowd most weeks since he's been here as manager, and really thank them and praise them up when it's need be. But he's not afraid to give them a little clip round the ear when the time is right, is the best way I could say it. It's not suddenly that he wants there to be a broken relationship. It's never going to get to a kind of Mick McCarthy, them and us. You're either, what was the quote, inside the tent pissing out or outside pissing in. He's never going to get to that stage, Kieran McKenna. But I remember, I go back to the QPR game, 0-0, midway through the promotion season, around that Christmas period, where it was a really flat atmosphere and got a little bit moany and groany, and maybe expectations had got a little bit too high, and just some feet needed to be grounded after that. I think Freddie Ladapo was kind of the one on the end of some bits and pieces from the crowd that night. And Kieran McKenna just made a little point of that afterwards. And I thought he made a little point of it again after the West Brom game. And that was clearly around George Hurst. That was around the kind of collective groans and moans every time there was a little loose touch from George Hurst in the second half, and more so the sarcastic cheer that went up when he got substituted in that second half. It's not particularly helpful to a player. I could understand the reaction during the Charlton game. I felt that sense of annoyance and anger as much as the crowd did during that second half. No problem at all with people kind of booing in that situation or letting the players know that that's not acceptable. But it was a bit of I felt that was unnecessarily kind of dragged into the next home game against West Brom. Look, it being a lunchtime Sunday kickoff probably didn't help with the atmosphere. So, that was Kieran McKenna. As he's referenced just there, bits that he didn't like from the crowd around George Hurst, probably not particularly helpful for him. And I thought it was a real show of character off the back of that, for him to produce not only the two goals that he scored, but the performance that he did as well. His overall performance, I thought, was really good in this game. The work rate, as you say, is never in question, but his link play was a lot sharper in this. He was backing into centre-halves, pinning centre-halves, deft little layoffs, gets his goals as well. Five goals now, that puts him still, what are we, quarter of the way into the season? Still very much on track for 20 if he can continue that. And he's certainly left a few out there as well. So, hopefully that narrative around George Hurst can change now.
Okay, let's hear from the man himself, the man with the best accent in the whole town team. I could listen to him read a phone book. Let's listen to him talk about scoring two goals.
George, you have your first Ipswich Town brace tonight. I guess the next one you want to tick off will be an Ipswich Town hat trick at some point.
Yeah, most definitely. It's been a long time coming, personally, but I was hoping to go out there and, once I got the second, I was hoping to nick another opportunity and get the third, but I'm sure that'll come on another day. It's just, like I said, keep working hard and hopefully more goals will come.
Yeah, it felt like, as much as Ipswich needed this, you needed this as well in the way, didn't you? Because the last few weeks, I think, have been frustrating. You look at what happened at Borough and maybe some other opportunities passing you by. This is the time when those chances fall to you and you're able to take them.
Yeah, of course. It's, you can't get too upset by missing a chance. Ultimately, I try and score every single chance that I get. I'm never trying to miss them, but sometimes, for whatever reason, whether it's, it's me, whether it's something else around me, it's sometimes they just don't go in. Like I say, I'm the first person to look at myself. Sometimes probably a little bit too hard on myself, so trying to get out of that habit and just, next one, next one, next one. You miss one, there's another one coming. Just keep doing the right things, and same when they're going in, when they're going in. If you score one, next one. You can't dwell on it, whether it's gone in or whether it's not gone in. It's part and parcel of being a striker. So just keep putting myself in the right positions as often as possible, and the more chances I get, the more goals I'll get.
Yeah, a lot of ways to score a goal. You're liking those headers though, aren't you? A couple today, and they're a big part of your game.
Yeah, for sure. Probably sort of score a few more with the size of me, but it's nice, always nice to like you say, get in the right areas and the opportunities come. So to score two headers, I think both deliveries, the one from Sindra in the first half and the little stand up to the back post from D in the second half, both great deliveries, and it's just about me trusting that I know where they're trying to find and being in position at the right time.
There we go then, Big George. He also went on to say about the he came off, didn't he? He was subbed. Look, he might have done his hammy, went down holding his hammy, but he told AJ that was just cramp and he'll be fine for tomorrow night, which is good because Ivan Azon doesn't look like he's going to play with muscle issues as well. So great that George is going to be fit and firing, hopefully, for tomorrow night and a chance to get some more goals for him. Right then. So that's definitely positive, good stuff, Stewie. But QPR got back on level terms in this game. And it was, that feeling of inevitability, I guess, around, Town have got an early goal. Oh, but they've conceded and, it's 1-1 at half time. Any thoughts on the goal and the kind of general mood at half time around Town?
I thought the goal came against the sort of the flow of the game at the time. Mm. I was surprised, actually, that Kieran McKenna was a little bit sort of down on the first part of the game. He sort of says that they needed to be better at putting their foot to the floor after getting the early goal and making more of that. I thought the first 20 minutes or so was really good from an Ipswich Town point of view. I thought they were playing with sort of aggression. They were first to the second ball every time. They were snapping into tackles. They were playing with intensity. And then QPR get a goal, a little bit out of the blue. I've praised up the right-hand side, but obviously it comes down that side with Elias Chair, who looked QPR's most dangerous player, being given too much time and space to get his shot off. I think, Valeragelli is one that's maybe could get a little bit tighter to him. Could Christian Walton do more in terms of where he sort of pushes it back into danger, possibly? Rebound goal. And then that's when we're starting to ask the questions of character and running towards adversity and have lessons been learnt from that Charlton game. Rest of that second half was scruffy, was about the best I can sort of say. Neither team were really kind of at it. First half.
First half. So we get to half time 1-1, Rossi. You love this question, so I'm going to ask you it. How are you feeling at half time?
Wet, cold. So I went inside and got a cup of tea and a sandwich. Yeah. Nice. It was, as Stu mentioned, it was scruffy. When QPR equalised, I did feel like, oh, God, here we go. It's going to be one of those games where the home team will be, their tails will be up and they'll probably score just before half time and then it'll just be one of those. But, thankfully it was 1-1 going into half time. I just felt like Town in that first 20 minutes. They were sort of dominating. They had many chances. I couldn't really keep up. Every time I was trying to put pitches in the system for the boys, I was like, oh, they're attacking again. Because we had a few, big chances before obviously QPR equalised. It's frustrating when you're on top and then they get the equaliser and, QPR fans, because they weren't happy, really. There are loads of QPR fans behind me and they were like, saying some very naughty words, and they weren't happy with Darnell Furlong when he was doing throw-ins, because I think Darnell had his foot over the line a few times and they were shouting at the linesman. So they were really frustrated, but like any home side, when they get the equaliser, they're now back on their team and then not backing them. But that first half the whistle needed to blow, in my opinion. So, everything could calm down and get ready for the second half.
Yeah, I mean, that view, I think, was echoed on game day, wasn't it? Most of the boys on there said it could have been anything at halftime in terms of second half, what was going to happen. As it turned out, though, Stu, they come out just as they had done in the first half and they get an early goal. And this was a blow that Julien Stéphane said was basically the turning point in the game. He said it was mentally tough to bounce back after they conceded this free kick goal from Mr. Nunes, who clearly is another positive we have to talk about in this game. Two free kick goals, playing in that 10 spot. What did you make of this and his performance overall? Because clearly that's a chat going forward. Is he now the man that has that 10 spot? Has he made it his own? Should he make it his own?
The first thing I'd say is I think this was the decisive moment in the game. As you say, half time, anything can happen. If QPR get the next goal, the crowd are up and with them, and it would have been tough for Ipswich. But to concede within, I think it was 68 seconds of both kickoffs, is a real psychological blow for QPR. I'm not sure it's a free kick on Jaden Philogene. I've not seen it back, but my instinct at the time was it was a really soft one. It's a good free kick. Of course it's a good free kick, but I think the wall's not great, and you know, he's just basically sort of passed it around the outside of the wall and into the net, or he's whipped it, really. That's doing him a disservice. But great technique from Nunez. We know he's got it. And that was, I think, the sort of the killer blow to QPR to have conceded sort of twice at the start of both halves like that. Nunez in the 10. I think I said in the post-match video, strip away his two goals, strip away two free kick goals. I'm not sure we'd be speaking about him, you know, going, wow, he's the answer to the number 10. And that was obviously the general consensus off the back of his exciting sort of cameo there after Smodics and Akpom have both gone injured against West Brom. Nunez comes on, looks really creative and energetic in the 10, albeit against sort of tiring legs of West Brom. Did a lot of things good. I think that energy that he's got can be unleashed a little bit more when he plays further up the pitch. His instinct is to chase everything. We talk about the technical qualities of Nunez. He's a grafter as well. But he does it in a kind of a enthusiastic puppy dog fashion and runs everywhere. And when he's having to play deeper, certainly when he had to play that really deep role when Matasiwa was suspended, I think he might lack the discipline for that. So you can take the reins off him a little bit when he's further forward. Obviously, he can then, you know, his eye for a pass and his creative talent can shine a little bit further up the pitch as well. On the flip side of that, there were times where he gave the ball away and that led to some good counter-attacking opportunities from QPR. So it can work. He's played there before. For the time being, it looks like that's his slot with Smodics out for the foreseeable. And Akpom might be needed up front in the short term, which we'll come on to. But I'm not ready to sit here and say he is the absolute answer to the number 10 problem. I want to see a little bit more from that. And I think we probably will see it tomorrow night.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the key moment in the game. In terms of quality and, I remember when they used to do that all the time. The third goal was a beautiful team goal, Rossi. Really nice interplay. Gelly, again, a key part of it. Furlong, another one getting his first assist, and then Hurst is there again. Those are the sort of goals that we're used to seeing Ipswich Town score when they're kind of fully clicking and gelling and in their pomp. And it was lovely to see that in a game like this.
Yeah, felt like Town had loads of confidence. And, you know, the players were playing, you know, Kieran Kenna, you know, got his book out and go, here we go, boys. This is what we're going to do, the playbook. And it was really just nice to see a team goal because a lot of people have been saying it's a team of individuals, but for this one, it felt like the team got together, got their goal. And I'm sure Hurst is happy for that, you know, assist as well. Furlong, of course, tracked back, you know, cut in and in the box, and George Hurst was there. But it's nice that this team had an opportunity to say, this is our team. We can really, you know, put together, like, you know, goals like that. As I said, they were playing with freedom and they're just wanting to get more and more goals, which is nice to see.
So you've already touched on the right side and obviously the Gelly seems to be the kind of preferred starter there now over McAteer, and we know Wes Burns is going to come back in at some point. But in terms of a Gelly, how much has he improved, do you think, since the start of the season? Because another one of our columnists, Terry Hunt, says he thinks he's getting better every single game and could be, you know, one of the best players in the league before too long.
He's improved. Certainly think he's improved. I think there's still a lot more improving to go. I'm not quite ready to make those sort of grand statements around him at the moment. His shooting needs to improve is something that I would say. There's been snatched at a couple of volleys, didn't he? Where was that at? Which game was that where he had a couple of volley chances?
Borough, maybe?
Might have been the Borough game. Yeah, and he's had a couple of... He can clearly hit a ball and strike the ball with power, but the accuracy's not quite been there at the moment. So I think that's probably the next step on his sort of journey for Ipswich, is to start testing the goalkeeper a little bit more. But he's got power and pace, and that's exciting, isn't it? As I say, he's got a lot of qualities, combined qualities there. Still don't, you know, I think there will be a little bit of rotation at time. I don't think we should suddenly sort of write off Casey McAteer. There will be games that he starts. He may well start tomorrow night, Casey McAteer against Watford. We'll come on to that one. Yeah, but quietly encouraged by Violet Agelli at the moment, but don't want to be sticking him on a pedestal just yet is probably my verdict on him.
Rossi, you put your hand up. What do you want to say?
I think it could actually have been the Bristol game.
Bristol, yeah.
Yeah, I remember him. Of course, he had that free kicks moments where, like, oh, God. But yeah, Nunes is on free kicks, you know, going forward. Obviously, he was always going to be with his, you know, his history with Norwich. Those free kicks at Bristol, I still got nightmares. Sorry, Sintre, but they were not good. Thankfully, Nunes stepped up and got his.
Well, let's stick with Nunes then, free kicks, Rossi, because he's the one who gets the fourth goal, another free kick. What do you make of this one? Because I've seen a few fans say it was an own goal.
Yeah, it does get a massive deflection. But Nunes, he was going on target anyway. But, you know, obviously the keeper, well, you see the clip, the keeper's not happy because it made him, you know, go a different way. I think Nunes still has got the brace. I don't think they've gone to the goals panel and saying, you know, is he going to get that chalked off? I think Nunes will not be happy about that. But it's so weird. It was like in the same position pretty much, wasn't it? Stepped up and then sort of just did the same technique and then went in the back of net. And that is that discussion after the game is like, who was the last player we had to sort of scored a dead ball free kick? And it was Nathan Broadhead. Guess you're for Wednesday in League One. And I'm trying to think, maybe that's a feature in the future, you know, looking at dead ball specialists in town history. I'm trying to think of other players. I know Martin Royce back in the day used to score some good free kicks. Jimmy Guan, the Frenchman, scored one as well. It's been Martin Waghorn scored a few. Leave it with me. Maybe that's something I can look into. And yeah, let us know, ladies and gentlemen, anybody that comes to mind, free kick wise, in Ipswich Town shirt, who scored a few good ones.
A live production meeting on air. Stewie, let's talk about someone else as well who has kind of come in out of the cold and has impressed in the last couple of games. And he's someone that I don't think any of us would have expected, actually. Certainly we wouldn't have predicted it. Jack Taylor in midfield. We've talked about Azor Matasiwa, and clearly he is a kind of unquestioned starter in that kind of holding midfield role, defensive midfielder, destroyer. But there have been various players tried alongside him. We thought it was going to be Jens Kajusta. He's gone off the boil a little bit. Obviously, Nunes has played there as well. But Jack Taylor's come in and everyone is saying how well he's playing and completely out of the blue, really.
Yeah, another solid game from Jack Taylor in midfield. Teams are all about blends and combinations, aren't they? And not always the best team on paper. And maybe that's where we're headed with this central midfield, that I don't think anyone's going to argue that Jack Taylor is a better footballer than either Kajusta or Nunes, but he has some different attributes, and in terms of plays with a little bit more bite, aggression, discipline, certainly looks that way at the moment, as I've sort of alluded to. Maybe does it a little bit more in the kind of Massimo Luongo way. When you look back at the promotion teams, I think Luongo's off the ball stuff went under the radar a little bit in terms of covering the gaps that Leif Davis leaves, bombing forwards, having a proper double pivot that allows fullbacks to bomb on and the front four to do their work. Whereas Kajusta and Nunes are, are trying a few flicks and tricks and trying to get up the pitch and maybe leaving some gaps behind them. Early days, of course, but Jack Taylor has certainly looked good in these couple of games and made the team look a bit more solid, I would say.
Okay, we'll come on to Watford in a minute, how many changes we think might be made, because obviously that's going to be a big question going into tomorrow night. The other one I want to ask you about, Ross, is Cedric Kiepre. He's another one who's kind of, we've talked about being a contentious position, who plays next to O'Shea. Kiepre is the man in possession of the shirt at the moment. How do you think he did in this game, and do you think he should be the kind of first choice going forward? We've spoken about this trade-off between him and Jacob Greaves.
Yeah, I thought he did okay. Yeah, he's just a big boy, isn't he? Every time he comes up for a corner, I sort of like, that's when I get my opportunity to really get good pictures of defenders when they're coming up and getting sort of nice profiles of them. Because when they're up close and personal to me, because when I'm the other end of the pitch, I can't, you know, see them really up close and personal until they come to me. And he is a big boy. But he used his size really well against QPR because they've got, you know, they're playing two up front. Richard Kone, of course, is a big boy. And he sort of dealt with him very well. He does have a few moments, and I think West Brom fans, when I spoke to them when we signed him, that he does have a few moments where you go, oh, God, what's he doing there, Cedric? But at the moment, that's his, you know, position to lose because I feel him and O'Shea got a good partnership going there. I do feel sorry for Jake Cruz a little bit, but that is the partnership. McKenna's going down, but I do feel like that we've seen in the past where McKenna, he does switch his centre-halves when they're playing a certain style of play. So, yeah, I would not be surprised if Jake and Greaves gets chucked in at some point, but I can't see it happening for Tuesday night because Watford play two up front as well. So I think Keep Ray is here to stay for now.
You got any thoughts on that, Stu, the Keep Ray Greaves debate? I know AJ was talking about Kone and needing a physical kind of player to counteract that, what he brings to it. Keep Ray certainly physical, but he's, you know, I don't think he's really put a foot wrong, apart from the Middlesbrough game where everyone, you know, hardly cover themselves in glory. But for me, he's the form guy, he should play.
Yeah, I've always said that I centre half is not an area of the team that I like to see rotation in. I think that's a big partnership in your team that you want to embed and have week in, week out. Centre halves don't cover the same amount of ground as other players on the pitch. I see no reason why they can't play week in, week out, even when the games are coming thick and fast. Keep praise the man in possession of the shirt at the moment. I am fearful there's a red card coming down the track at some point with Keep Pray. There is, as Ross says, moments where you kind of wince a little bit because he's got that sort of all action, all energy style where he sort of goes hunting the ball when it's bouncing around at times. So I'm sure there will be a moment or two along the way like that. But yeah, he's in possession of the shirt at the moment. I'm sure he will start tomorrow night against Watford. Hopefully he can keep doing well.
The perfect segue then to the Hornets visit tomorrow night. Before we get to that, though, anything else you want to mention specifically from this game, boys, you think worthy of note before we move on?
I want to ask Stu a question. Mm-hmm. He had three pies at Loftus Road, but he took two home. So was he five pie Watson?
No, they just came on a little journey home with me and then they went in the bin the next day. So it was just the three pies. They were small pies. In my defence, I wasn't the only member.
What was in the pies?
Steak.
Oh, the classic! And yeah. You just go in pie. Are there any kind of sides with the pie? Or is it just pie?
It was just pie, wasn't it? Yeah, there was no accompaniments. These were like a thin crust, lots of filling, quite small, nice. Very good pies.
All about the filling, isn't it? In a pie, the filling to pie ratio. Too little filling, bad pie. Too much can actually go the other way. But just right amount of filling to pastry ratio. That's what you want, like a sausage roll as well. Anyway, I'm digressing. Friends, let's talk about Watford tomorrow night. Rossi, you'd love this, talking about this. How many changes do you think they're going to be made?
Seven. No. I hope not. Because that's the thing. You know, there's only one enforced change on Saturday against QPR. Obviously, Nunes coming in for Sammy Smodic, and obviously Jack Taylor keeping his place, and there's only two changes on the bench. So obviously there's a few knocks. Leif Davis came off injured, so I'm sure he'll get, you know, fitness test and all that jazz, you know, today, and then we'll see. I know Hurst said he's fine, but you just never know. He could be just saying that. Me just speculating now. But yeah, I think there'll be a few, because I'm sure there was a few knocks and bruises in this game against QPR. But it's like, you know, the cliche, like, you don't change a winning team, do you? So I don't want to see too many changes, because last time we did that, we obviously lost. So please don't do that, Kieran.
But I'm going to ask you the same questions here, and also your thoughts on Watford, because they've got the worst away record in the league, yet they've just come off a game where they've beat Middlesbrough 3-0. And there were some mad results in the Championship over the weekend. Toughest league in the world, cliche. What are your thoughts about this game and the potential changes? Because this one's going to be really interesting, isn't it, in terms of what McKenna does and rotation?
It is, yeah. And I've got some quotes from Kieran McKenna coming on the website around that. That was obviously the first question to him in terms of there's been a lot of midweek changes so far with mixed results. I think six changes at Bristol City, and that was an okay performance and a decent draw. Seven for the Charlton game, and we all know how that ended up. And suddenly there's this big debate around, does there need to be a settled side? What I would say is take those two games out of the equation, the two midweek games. It has been a pretty settled side since the transfer window shut at the end of August. It's been, you know, a couple of enforced changes here and there. But in general, a team has started to emerge. This comes sort of sandwiched between two away games, Swansea away coming up on Saturday. I think we'll probably see a happy medium. I think there'll be changes. I don't think we'll see as many as 6-7. My daughter would be doing some silly move in the background at that one.
What is that, by the way? What is that?
Nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Nobody knows, but they're obsessed with it. Okay. I've got it sort of around 3 to 5 changes in the team with sort of question marks here, if you want me to go through it.
I would love you to go through it.
All right. I think most of the back five will be as is. Walton, Furlong, O'Shea, Kipray. I think he will stay in at left-sided centre-half. Davis did come off with a tight hamstring in the second half. Depends how far they kind of want to push him. He's such an important player. That will all come down to kind of the medical assessment. Both Ben Johnson and Ashley Young got on the pitch and had some minutes at left-back. Johnson initially at left-back, and then he pushed further forward, and Young played at left-back in the latter stages. So that would suggest that Ben Johnson is kind of next in line for left-back, but hopefully all being well, Davis is fit. Matasiwa is a nailed-on starter, and then, you know, we've talked about how a bit more solid they've looked with Taylor in the side, but is this now when you bring Jens Kajusta in for a game at home just to freshen things up, possibly? And then top end of the pitch, I think Nunez has to go again in the number 10 slot because Szmodics is clearly out still with having had an operation on his knee. Akpom is the only alternative in the 10, but I think they'll want him either as a starter or as a substitute for as a striker option. That's where he finished the game on Saturday. Again, Hurst, personally, if he's fit, I'd like him to go again. He scored twice, big boost of confidence, run with that. You know, McKenna said he had a tight hamstring. George told Alex, oh no, it's fine. It's just, you know, it was just cramp, but it looked quite severe cramp, didn't it? He was down for a little while. So we'll see. If he's fit, I'd like to see her start again. I think it will be Jack Clark for Philogene on the left. And I don't think many people can have too many qualms about Jack Clark stepping into the side, given what he's been doing off the bench. And then the right side is an interesting one, whether it's Valiageli or whether it's Casey McAteer. I think everyone's kind of got Valiageli pegged way ahead of McAteer at the moment in terms of form and what they've seen. But I thought McAteer was better in the game against West Brom when he was on the pitch. So I don't want people to be writing him off. I think Valiageli is someone that they'll treat with kid gloves to a certain extent a little bit. So I wouldn't be shocked to see that one change. So how many of those alterations get made, I don't know. But there will be changes, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I thought going to that McAteer conversation, I thought it was really interesting hearing him talk. He spoke really well at the press conference last week about how tough he's found it, having left Leicester, you know, clearly the only club, his boyhood club, where he knew everyone and knew exactly how everything worked. He'd been there for 14 years and he's all on his own in Suffolk at a new club, new way of doing things. And I know tiny violins and all that kind of stuff, but I have to remember these guys, and they are mostly young men. I mean, younger than all of us. And again, going back to the Hurst stuff, they're human beings first and foremost. And, you know, that all kind of factors into into how they play and how they perform on the pitch. So if you haven't watched that, listened to that, read the bit we did with McAteer, go and have a read of that, because I did think it's quite eye-opening and honest stuff from Casey last week. Rossi, are we going to do predictions? Have you got the prediction table?
I haven't got it in front of me, unfortunately, but Stu is still leading the way, of course. Actually, let me get it up quickly as we're doing it. I'm the only one who didn't get any points because I went for a draw, didn't I?
Didn't you, silly boy?
I know, but, you know, it is what it is. I'll take that sacrifice of, you know, not getting any points. But obviously, no one got it bang on, so it was only points for you guys. But yeah, Stu's on 13. You're actually now joint with me. And AJ, of course, is still bottom, bless him. So
Didn't Stu get the first scorer, though? He got Hurst.
No, AJ did.
Oh.
AJ actually gets 2 points. So, okay.
Do you think we should do predictions now? Or should we just leave it? It feels quite early to do predictions. Might be ones that we kind of think about.
Oh, I thought you meant the entire league. I thought you meant stop the count. Let's call it off.
Yeah. I wouldn't be saying that unless I was top, mate. Let me tell you. Actually, yeah, let's not bother with predictions. We'll do that. We'll do that separately. I want to talk, though, about the mad championship. My Teams is just popping off. Teams is the most annoying thing that's ever been invented, isn't it? Shut up. I don't think that's coming through on the audio. God, that's annoying. Championship, boys. It's mad, isn't it? I mean, we talk about Town taking their time to get into stride. Look at what's happening with Southampton. Will still gone 6 months in. 20th position. Leicester sliding down the table. Suddenly Town look like the form side from the sides that went down. And then you look at the results this weekend as well. Bristol City getting thumped 5-1. Wrexham beating Coventry, you know, previously unbeaten Coventry, runaway title favourites Coventry. And also, of course, do you have to reflect on what's happening down the road as well? Because all is certainly not ripe at Carrow Road. I'm going to have to turn my Teams off before I put it through a window.
You can't hear it.
You can't hear it. Anyway, carry on. Mad Championship, Stu, on that theme.
Yeah, it's been that way for a number of years, hasn't it? Long been heralded as the most competitive league in world football, and anyone can beat anyone. That said, the last couple of years, there's been three teams that have ended on 90-plus points at the top end of the table. It's been a sort of a top four teams that have looked better than the rest. Certainly in the year Ipswich went up. I think that was the case last year as well. I don't think we're going to see that again this year. It genuinely does look a lot more concertinaed. If the likes of Ipswich or others kind of get their act together and come through at the end, they're doing so from a slow start. So very much wide open and all to play for. And as you say, the results at the weekend very much suggest that, don't they?
Mm. Did you anyone see or enjoy the protest at Norwich?
Saw the pictures. from what I gather, it was very much a damp squib. I think Alex put a picture out there saying there was, I think, five tennis balls.
Yeah,
made their way onto the pitch. As I've gently tried to say to a few sort of people associated with Norwich over the years. When that apathy gets hold, it feels like they're kind of getting into the early stages of that sort of Ipswich Town decline. And it's not that death by a thousand cuts. It's not just like an instant everything's bad overnight. What makes it worse sometimes is it's slow and it's protracted and the apathy kicks in. And for a long time, Norwich fans always used to kind of mock at Ipswich's attendances and how they've been kind of sold out and they'll always be sold out. I don't know if that will be the case. They seem to be in a real low spot at the moment, don't they, with the whole mood around that. And we've been there ourselves, haven't we, in the not so distant past. That cycle always comes back round to you eventually, doesn't it? So tough times up the road at Norwich at the moment. And I'm sure the fact that they saw Mr. Nunez scored twice, just rub some salt in the wounds.
It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because our colleagues down the road, Paddy, who we had on the pre-Derby podcast, and Connor, and I'm seeing the same kind of things after every game. You know, this club's broken, something's got to change. And the fans, I mean, chanting for everyone to go. Manning, Napa, the board, you're not fit to wear the shirt to the players as well. It's turning pretty toxic down there. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. Anyway, friends, Something else to mention is KOA Live 3, which is coming officially December the 20th at the Baths in Ipswich. Tickets are available now. We're going to share the link all over our social media. We'd love you to join us. The idea is it's a bit of a Christmas shindig, a Christmas party, if you will, hopefully off the back of Town doing something they've never done before on the day of a KOA Live, which is winning a game of football against Sheffield Wednesday, which you'd have to say at the moment they'd be favourites for. Please do join us. Come along and say hello. We'll have the usual kind of stuff that we'd have. If you've been to either one or two, you'll know what to expect. And hopefully you can recommend it to people who've not been before. Because it should be a good time, shouldn't it, Rossi? There's already talk of you dressing up as Santa at some point.
Yes. So, are you going to be on my naughty or good list? We'll find out. But, that'll be, I don't know, do I dye my beard white just for
I really would love you to do that, yeah.
Yeah, because that'd be weird me putting on a beard
over your beard.
So, it's going to be a great night. It was lovely the last two times, especially KOA Live 2, because it just felt like we were bringing the community back together after, the years of just not being able to record because of COVID and stuff, and just seeing familiar faces and, listeners who don't get a chance to maybe see us that often because they don't get to games, but they so there's a few people I know just they came to the game because they wanted to come to KOA Live too. So if you haven't been before, it's a really good night, just nice social after a game, and hopefully Town do get a win so we can chat about a nice 3 points.
It would be a nice way to start the show with Town making history, having beaten Sheffield Wednesday and thus won for the first time. Stu, you're tapping away, what's going on?
When Ross was talking about listeners, bringing listeners together in the community, did you mention the gentleman that you had on game day after the...
No, yes.
No, okay. Well, Johnny. I'll give him a shout now. I was just checking that you hadn't done this. But so I'm just having a quick look on my email to remind myself. But it's a gentleman called Johnny Hayward, who I had the pleasure of meeting... it was the Charlton game. He'd come over, but he lives in Djibouti, in the Horn of Africa, on the Horn of Africa, which is the kind of the East Anglia of Africa in many ways. It's the sort of the bit sort of that sticks out on the east. And he's a scuba diving instructor that lives abroad, but he comes over for Town games. I think his record's not very good this season when he's travelled over. So he said he might be the bad luck charm. But that always blows my mind when I hear people that listen to us in these far flung places. Djibouti, it's hard to say, isn't it? Djibouti.
You beauty, it's Djibouti.
Thank you. Yeah. So that was a new one. So a little shout out to Johnny.
Fancy coming all the way from Djibouti to watch them get thumped 3-0 at home to Charlton.
Mm. He also went to Blackburn, Preston and Borough.
Ouch.
So yeah. Wasn't an obviously Charlton game, so yeah. And he actually messaged me when we beat West Brom. He said, "I knew I was the curse." So Johnny, if you're listening, and also we've got to give a shout out as well to Michael, who messaged the Kings of Anglia chat, who got married in Bali over last week. So shout out to Michael. He sent us a nice picture of him and his wife on their wedding day, and he said, "Just got married last week, lads. I wanted to have an Ipswich Town scarf for some of my photos, but knew the missus wouldn't go for it." Anyway, we're in Bali and I'm still supporting the boys all over from over here. And he supported the boys through it all as an American fan. Cheers and thanks again. So, yeah.
What's his full name, Rossi? Because Michael could be anyone.
Yeah, Michael Gimamati. I'm sorry, I've just butchered that, Michael. I'm so sorry. But we thought it was like a mafia boss, like naming it.
Let me find it.
I sent it in the chat. Name. Yeah. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, it's just me again.
I just want to make sure he gets his full name shout out, because Michael could be anyone. Michael Giamatti.
Yeah.
Michael Giamatti is what I'm going to call him. And Michael, congratulations. I hope you enjoyed your wedding in paradise out in Bali, somewhere I need to get one day too. Friends, we've been coming to the end of the show. Anything else to mention, Stu or Ross?
Watford, we should probably sort of just have a bit of a general chat around them. As you say, they thrashed Middlesbrough 3-0 at the weekend, yep, which was among those shock results. How many managers have they had now? They've already changed once again this season. Tom Cleverley,
it's just what they do, though, isn't it? It's like they're normal.
Yeah. Uruguayan Paulo Pezzolano comes in. He gets 10 games, a record of three wins, three draws, four defeats. He's gone. And they bring back Javi Grazia, who was there and had a bit of success with them relatively back in 2018-19. They sort of finished mid-table in the Premier League table, got to the FA Cup final. Really interesting statement around that, with the club sort of saying that he'd been brought in for consistency and selection, harmony in the dressing room and a strong connection with supporters. They've had a bit of a mixed record under him so far. They come into this one, one lost, one is their record coming into this game. So don't really know what we're going to get from Watford, but they look like a side packed with pace, certainly in the flanks, very good on the counter-attack. So this is a real test of whether Ipswich have, learned some lessons from being this wide open football team that are conceding chances on the counter, and they're going to have to put some of those lessons into practice on tomorrow night.
As I said, Watford worst record away from home in the entire league. Previously, kind of level with Town, but now Town have obviously got that away win. Watford very much at the bottom of that table. And do you know what? I said we weren't going to do predictions, but sod it. Let's do them, shall we? Rossi, give me your prediction.
Oh, the question is, could this be one of those just annoying games? We have that 4-1 win and then we draw 0-0. But no, come on, Town. Three wins in a row. 2-0. I want a clean sheet. 2-0. First goal scorer. Let's do... Cedric Kipre, why not? Just random.
Wow.
Set Cedric piece. Kipre. Boom. Okay. Head on.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it? So Ross is saying 2-0. Stewie, you're leading the way. What is actually going to happen at Portman Road tomorrow night?
I normally have a bit of a gut feeling going into games, but this is one where genuinely I've thought of all three outcomes several times and I keep flip-flopping. If I'm honest, I came into this podcast ready for when you asked me this question. I might put it down as a Watford win.
Oh,
I feel like it could be a little bit. I didn't think Ipswich were amazing at QPR the weekend. I thought they, deserved the win, but they were sort of goals, as I mentioned. Watford have got some of the qualities that I mentioned that can be a bit of an Achilles heel for Ipswich. Could be a little bit of the crowd at Portman Road. I'm not quite sure which way that's going to go. I'll go with it. I know it's not particularly positive. I hope I'm wrong. As always, I'll say 2-1 to Watford.
Ouch. And who's going to get the lone goal for Town, Stu?
Let's go with Chuba. That chant was going around Loftus Road at the weekend.
Okay, so Ross is saying 2-0 win, Cedric Kipre, and Stewie's saying 2-1 defeat, Chuba Akpom. I will say, I'm going to say 2-1 Town win, and I think George Hurst will score, hopefully, because he's riding this hot hand. It'd be great to see him get another goal, and Town obviously get another win. Yes, Rossi?
Can I change my first goal scorer, actually?
Yes.
Just in case Kipre doesn't start. I know we just chatted about that, but I don't know.
Well, if he doesn't start, just change it. You change it then, can't you? But anyway, yeah, who do you want?
I'm going to go for the Gene, actually. He loves, scoring at Portman Road, so I'm going to
What if he doesn't start and Jack Clark starts?
Bollocks. But then he's more likely to come on. He's more likely to come on, Kipre. Like, defenders won't, they don't bring defenders on. So I want to go for the Gene, please.
Can we lock that in? Because you've got a history of saying over the names. So Philogene, you were saying?
Yeah,
2-0. Philogene 2-0. Stu's saying Watford 2-1. Who did you say was going to score off? I've forgotten.
Akpom.
And I've said 2-1 Town, George Hurst. We'll get AJ's views. Obviously, that'll be shared ahead of the game. Friends, then, Cairo Live tickets are live now. So make sure you grab them. Because hopefully they'll sell out pretty quickly. And we want as many people there to celebrate Christmas and a big win, fingers crossed, for Town then. Also, speaking of Christmas, just a reminder, this baby is available. A Blue Era, the story of how Ipswich Town were reborn. Look past the fact that of all the people on the front cover, only two people actually remain at Town, because that's all part of the story, isn't it? All part of the journey. So that's available too, as is Mission Impossible as well. If you want to get both, stick them in some Christmas stockings, that's still available as well. Support our sponsors. Use the code KOA for 20% off at stardustspirits.co.uk as you look towards getting your Christmas booze in. I keep saying, but the Cascade Rum and the Single Malt, I can highly recommend. And also use the code KOA10 at molecular-uk.com. If you're car proud, they do a wonderful range of car cleaning products. I've already tried the interior one, which has got my my interior looking very shiny and smelling pretty lovely. And hopefully we'll get a point where it doesn't rain quite so much, so I can really get into the nooks and crannies of my alloys. That's not a euphemism. And clean them up using the products from Molecular. And also, friends, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes just because it helps lift us visibility-wise in the charts. And obviously that's important to us. More people find this pod and can get involved. All right, then, friends, we will go. We've got Watford to build up to. It's feeling good at the moment, being an Ipswich Town fan or follower of covering them. And hopefully they'll make it 3 wins in a row tomorrow. Whatever happens, we'll be back later on this week to break it all down and then build up to the big, long, winding road to Swansea this weekend. Have a great start to your week. We'll speak to you next time.
Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.